Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Drop the legal drinking age, increase the legal driving age. These are a few of the ideas that Central Ohio lawyer Brad Koffel has developed over time in response to his practice working with parents and children who are charged in drunken driving and other alcohol-related offenses. Brad makes a living off the drinking ban, however, for anyone under the age of 21, and he's with us today to explain why he thinks and why he's learned through that work that the laws don't work and how we can translate our concern for alcohol abuse among young folks into laws that make more sense. Brad, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Also joining us today, Drug-Free Action Alliance Assistant Director Marcy Seidel. Marcy, thanks for being with us today.
It's a delight to be here. Thank you, Ann.
And Shira Wyatt, she's past president and founding member of Parents Encouraging Responsible Choices. It's a group that formed in Dublin to consult with Dublin City Council and the public safety officials there and helped get passed an ordinance that affects that has to do with parental responsibility when it comes to underage drinking. Thanks for being with us, Marcy.
It's a pleasure being
Shira,
here.
I should say. I guess, you know, The old questions, the old arguments about the drinking bans, whether it's prohibition for everybody or whether it's age prohibition as it stands now, is the old enough to fight, old enough to drink, old enough to vote, old enough to drink, old enough to drive, maybe not so old enough to drink. We don't know. But Brad, what inspired you to question the laws as they stand now, which is 21 years old or older to drink?
Well, first of all, I think I need to make sure that everyone understands. I'm on the same page with everyone. My end result is that I don't know anyone under the age of 25, let's say, that dies from alcohol abuse. I have four children. I hope none of them fall to the siren call of binge drinking and furtive drinking. And as I start this conversation essentially as a parent and also as a professional in the substance abuse community that also works inside the criminal courts, and I see ineffective law. And it's been on the books, you know, we're talking about since 1983. We've had our drinking age at the age of 21. And the statistics really don't bear out that we are doing anything other than driving teen drinking underground, making it furtive, making it intensified. There's a concept we'll talk about this morning called pre-gaming. Mm-hmm. There are new rituals to get drunker faster before you go out. And it's more dangerous because a lot of kids are afraid to call home, especially kids in communities where there's a higher level of expectation morally, values, educationally, and they don't want to disappoint their parents. And when we encourage kids to keep their drinking to themselves and not have a spotlight on it, we're sending a wrong message. And if kids would rather make a run for it to get home or be afraid to take a friend who's really, really drunk to a hospital, that's the absolutely wrong message that we should be sending. That's really where I like to start the conversation.
What about the message that we're sending? And there has been a lot of talk about the furtive drinking and particularly about that binge drinking, you know, among particularly college-age kids who want to go out to the game or want to go out to a party later. But if they're caught drinking in public, they could be arrested and be charged with underage drinking. What about that issue?
Well, I work for the Ohio College Initiative in our organization. So I work with 45 colleges around the state of Ohio about that. And a lot of the colleges are addressing that right now with what they call amnesty programs. And so that is, in fact, I was meeting with a college yesterday in another part of the state that we're talking specifically about the policies that they're putting in place to do that. So colleges are addressing that, and they are coming to terms with the fact that the safety and health of the kids are the most important things that need to happen. So colleges are addressing that.
Can you explain before we go on what you mean by amnesty?
That means that if a person is out at a venue where they're with another student, and both of them perhaps are drinking and drinking heavily, and one of them looks like they're getting into trouble, they have the ability to call for help and support either through the university or through the local police or medical units, and they will not then receive any particular sanctions that will jeopardize their education, and so they will not get the normal sort of things that would happen to them, consequences mm-hmm. that would happen with them if under normal circumstances. So the people are understanding that you need to put the safety and health of individuals ahead of it. Colleges are recognizing that, and they're finding it to be a very successful program. Now, I'd like to to address the fact that the Drug Free Action Alliance has studied the legal drinking age. I personally have studied it for about 10 years and then was called upon to help write a position paper from our agency about a year ago. And we have come to the overwhelming conclusion that 21 is exactly the right age for young people to be allowed to officially or illegally to drink. And there's the preponderance of evidence is overwhelming. And we have found through more than 50 to 100 different very precise research methods that the 21 laws, when they have gone into effect, have in fact reduced alcohol-related deaths, have reduced alcohol-related injuries. And in fact, we know some kids will drink and they will always continue to drink. But under the 21 laws, kids are drinking less and fewer kids are drinking. So it's been a success.
How do you know that it's not a correlation? How do you know that it's a causation and not a correlation? In other words, aren't there other factors at work in our society that may be reducing alcohol consumption among younger people?
Yeah, I'm not
like,
a son.
Rules in schools that if you get caught drinking, you'll get kicked off the football team, which did not exist back when I was in high school
right.
in the olden days.
And I can only speak to the fact of the research that's out there. I'm not a researcher mm-hmm. myself. And as I said, there's more than 50 to 100 different research that have addressed those exact issues. Mm-hmm. And the preponderance of the research evidence that they have come up with have shown that it has actually, they actually consider it the most positive and the most effective public policy that's ever been put in place to address this particular issue, and they have addressed that.
What is the magic about the age of 21?
There's, you know, it started out, it's kind of a traditional thing. It started out after Prohibition that was just the age that was chosen to do it because it went along with the voting age at that point. And mm-hmm. then, of course, we all know what happened in the 70s with the Vietnam War and the change in the voting age. And so that changed. And that's when we got into a lot of trouble in the 70s when they dropped the drinking age. And we ended up that skyrocketed with the death and the injury rates and a lot of the problems that occurred. But the main thing that we're finding with some really new and cutting information and research is the mm-hmm. brain development.
Right.
We have now learned that the brain does not fully develop until about the mid-20s, and in some cases, in some parameters, up until 30. And the research that they're finding out now is that when you put alcohol in a developing brain, you are causing a lot of problems and potential problems for the future with a person's ability to learn, the ability to have executive reasoning. So there's a lot of research that now supports that. So sort of what was a tradition in the beginning is now being sort of solidified by the fact.
Well, how do you know
research?
When a brain is adult? What's the physiology of that?
There's a lot of MRI scanning that's going out and PET scanning that's showing the color functioning of the brain and allowing you to see exactly how it's developing. They are doing tests where they show alcohol impacting the effects of the brain and cognitive abilities. And these are some of the things that we are trying to make parents aware so that they can then express that information to their children so that when they are put in difficult situations, they can think about the facts. We often relate it to parents as cigarettes. Years ago, we didn't know anything about the effects of cigarettes and lung cancer. And now everyone knows that if you're smoking cigarettes regularly, you have a higher risk of getting lung cancer. It's the same thing with alcohol. If you're putting alcohol into a developing brain prior to the age of 21, the individual, the young adult, has the potential of having long-term effects as far as their brain abilities later in life.
Brad, what about the physiology of this in the age? It might have started out random in the beginning back at when Prohibition was repealed. They picked 21 because that was the voting age, and they said it kind of correlated everything with that. Now they're saying that there's research, medical research that shows that it does matter.
Yeah, there, I am aware of the MRI and the latest research relative to the full development of the frontal lobe of the brain. Mm-hmm. And I explain that to parents. And a lot of times when I'm in a conference room with clients, with a client and their parents, I talk to that young person about the fact that you may feel like you're an adult. You may be 18 or 19 years old, but at the end of the day, you're really not fully mature at 25. I think it might even be older. And you know, this is why
psychologists would probably agree with you on that score.
You know, probate and trust lawyers encourage parents when they're setting up trusts, stagger the distribution, you know, and really 35 and 30 are good ages before you can feel comfortable of true maturation. I think that's a bit of a segue from the fact that over 50% of American teens and 20-year-olds drink. Mm-hmm. We have an ineffective law, and when you have such a large population demographic flouting it, you really have to question the legitimacy of the law to begin with. And lowering the drinking age is not going to make more a 20-year-old who doesn't drink decide to start drinking. It's not going to have an 18-year-old who doesn't plan on drinking to start drinking. There are plenty of lawful activities out there that some kids elect not to do. I'm hearing a new trend of kids not wanting driver's licenses. That's mm-hmm. an absolutely foreign concept to me.
Me too.
When I was growing up, but it's becoming more of a norm. And I think if we treat these young adults, which they are, as adults, and we remove the taboo of alcohol, and we get a new conversation going about, look, when you were 5 and 6 years old, I wouldn't let you cross the street by yourself. You didn't have the capacity to completely understand that. And if we took an example of if there was a law in the books that 9-year-olds weren't allowed to cross the streets by themselves, and if a parent said you can't cross the street at all, and there was no education at all about little kids crossing the streets, but we knew that 50% of kids under the age of 9, if given an opportunity, will cross the street. Yet we're not having a conversation about look left, look right, look left again, and look for the crosswalk. You have to say, how effective is that law? Let's get rid of that law, and let's have a conversation that's in line with reality.
You know, we're going to have to take a quick break right now. I just want to invite my listeners. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org, and we could talk about all sorts of variations on a theme about how the laws should change. But one thing I guess we could talk about more generically is, do you think the law is working now? The law that the 21-year drinking age law in the whole nation now. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Take a quick break. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, top Pentagon brass complaint. The Israel-Palestinian impasse is undermining American interests. We'll look at the U.S.-Israel moment of crisis. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
And On Point begins later this afternoon at 1 o'clock right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Hear the latest updates from NPR and WOSU News from the convenience of your computer by streaming on the web. Be sure to listen online at WOSU.org. 45 degrees in downtown Columbus at 10:20. Sunshine today and a nice Thursday, a high of 65. Clear skies tonight, a low of 38 degrees. More sunshine for Friday and a high of 65. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about drinking and driving, and not in general. We're talking specifically about teenagers, underage drinkers drinking and driving, and drinking in general. Should the laws change? And what do our laws do? Do they drive kids underground to drink, underground to binge drink, to get ready to go out at night? We're talking about that with Brad Koffel. He's a criminal attorney in the Central Ohio area, and a lot of his practice revolves around parents' responsibility and underage drinking. Brad, thanks again for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
And also Marcy Seidel. She's with the Drug-Free Action Alliance. Marcy, glad you could be with us today.
Thanks, Ann.
And Cheryl Wyatt. She is past president and founder of PERC, that is Parents Encouraging Responsible Choices. Past president and founder of that. It's in Dublin, and they're behind
Social host law.
Social host law. I don't know why I can never remember that, but among many things I never remember. But Cheryl, tell us about that, the social host law, because when we called the city and talked to them about that this week, they said, well, it really wasn't, you know, there really was no trigger to it. There was nothing happening in our community that triggered it. But some people thought, I guess like PERC thought it was a good idea, and so no one opposed it. So they went ahead and did it. Tell us about the law and tell us why you thought it was a good idea to do something like that.
Well, it was actually brought to our attention and supported by a lot of the teens in the high school because, as Brad said earlier, we do a study every 3 years through Franklin County, the Primary Prevention Awareness Attitude Youth Survey.
Whoa, got to shorten that,
yeah,
baby.
Pause. And it basically says that about 42% of our seniors are drinking at least once a month or more. And the students came to us and said, you know, we respect what our parents have to say, our coaches have to say, but we need stronger enforcements in our city laws. And they came to council with us. We worked with them. The youth council got together. They spoke to council, and we changed the social host law from knowing to negligent. Where the city, with it being negligent, it's more ownership on the owner of the property based on consumption and possession being on their property.
So it's just saying that you – what does it mean? What does that mean, knowing to
– If you said knowingly, you could say, oh, I didn't know they were in my basement having beers, and you'd be off scot-free.
Okay.
Negligent means – you didn't do anything about it. You didn't go down and check. You let these kids in. You were actually being negligent about what was going on in your
property. If you didn't know what
property.
They were doing, then you were being negligent.
Right.
Okay.
So the negligent gives them more teeth in the law. Knowingly, it was easier to get around it and say, oh, I had no idea. But negligent, you have to prove that, you know, I tried. I was there. I was making sure, you know, when the kids came in, they had nothing with them. You know, we were just hosting a party because we don't want kids to not come and get together and socialize. That's critical in their development. It's just you want to make sure that they're in a safe environment and that they're having clean fun.
You know, when someone like the police chief and the city says, well, there wasn't a reason for it. We weren't having problems with that, but people thought it would be a good idea. How do you know something like that's working then? How do you prove a negative?
Well, there's actually been one arrest since the change. And word of mouth, kids are talking about the fact that there was going to be a party. The party got canceled because the police heard about it on Facebook, knocked on the parents' door, and the parents said, knowing the new law, we're not hosting a party at our house.
Which brings up a good question, knowing the new law, the issue there being some parents think it's okay if their kids drink in front of them. They think they're safer, that at least they're with me when they're drinking and I can watch what they're doing. Right, Brad? I mean,
well,
that's very common.
Absolutely. I mean, if one of my kids, it turns out when they're 16, 17, 18, 19, 20 years old consuming alcohol, and the reality of the situation is all four of my kids probably will at some point in time in their life. I don't know at what age it's going to start, but I'll tell you what, I want to know. And if we're going to push parents and friends of my kids' friends out of the picture, this drinking is even more off the grid. It's more surreptitious, and now you've lowered the standard where we're now criminal. Think about this: we're criminalizing a parent for being a supervising person in a house. That's ridiculous to me.
For those parents who are actually saying that they actually are supervising, I mean, some parents are just letting their kids have parties in their houses and saying, well, at least I know where they're at. But they're not really supervising. Some may be. I mean, people who have the little thimble of wine at dinner on Sundays, that's one supervision.
There's something in between.
Yeah.
And that is if there's going to be drinking and it's a junior or senior in high school or it's a freshman in college, what have you. If there's going to be drinking, what's our social preference? If we can't eradicate teen drinking, and I don't think anyone's going to suggest we go in and have some sort of surgery to remove that desire or that want, then we're stuck with it. And at this point in time, what are the lesser of the two evils? Do we want this teen drinking to occur in fields, parks, and cars? Or do we want this to occur if it's going to happen, a little bit more encouragement that if it's going to happen, it's going to happen in a home where presumably there's going to be a parent there or two or more, and they can monitor the situation. It's no different than at OSU on campus. I can just speak from personal knowledge. There used to be much more regulation of drinking on OSU's campus until the bars disappeared. And then everything went to the house parties. And when everything went to house parties, everything went to hell.
They can't control that. Yeah, Cheryl?
I was going to say the social host law is not geared to push the kids away. It's geared more towards keeping the parents who and the older siblings who are providing the alcohol so that they're – let's not go to Johnny's house because at Johnny's house, it's an open bar for everyone. It's more geared towards that kind of negligence of providing the alcohol and keeping parents away from that situation.
Do social host laws, do they apply to only to parents who serve other children outside of their household, or does it also apply to serving their own children?
In the state of Ohio, parents can serve their own children, right. Okay. So that's taken off the table. They certainly can't do that for other parents' children at all, and nor would I want them to. The one thing I wanted to bring up that I think is very notable is that there is a bill now in the Ohio legislature that talks about this very thing that Dublin did. And the people that are putting it together, it's a group of a strong coalition throughout Ohio that has come together supporting this bill, is it's not that they're wanting a punishment. That's not it. What we need to do is that they're using this as an opportunity to educate parents. Okay. And this is an opportunity to really get their attention, to pay attention to something that, you know, all the legal things aside, this is a serious public health issue that we need to draw attention to as to why it's important that young people don't drink, legally or non-legally. It's important that they don't.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about young people and drinking, to rephrase that. And if you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call, 614-292-8513. And let's see. Well, I'll try to make sure that I balance the calls because it's an emotional topic and there's going to be people for and against. So help me out with that. Let's see. Bill, you're on the air. You want to talk about how the prohibition equates alcohol with drugs?
Yeah, absolutely. I do some criminal defense work, and I find that clients who are charged with drinking under prohibition, which is between 18 and 21, it just puts them in a situation where it equates using alcohol with using drugs. They're both illegal activities. Possession of a small amount of marijuana is a minor misdemeanor. Using alcohol under prohibition has a higher penalty. So, you said that you wanted to balance the calls.
Mm-hmm.
I suggest that you balance them based on reason and not on emotionality, because what we have here is a situation where I think there are some well-meaning people who are pushing hard for a puritanical prohibition. But when you look at it on balance, to paraphrase Sam Warner, if you want to send a message, call Western Union. But if you want to deal with an issue, don't impose criminal penalties on young people for doing what has been going on forever and ever.
You know, I wanted to talk about an aspect that was brought up earlier as far as the amnesty that some of the colleges are adopting for their students. I get the logic of that, but I question if it's fair for kids who don't happen to be in college and are busted for doing the same thing. Are they going to get the amnesty from their local law enforcement just because, hey, they're just kids. Why should we throw them in jail and maybe they'll lose their job? They don't happen to have the luxury of being in college, or maybe going to a college where you live on campus and maybe you're going to a community college or something like that. What about that fairness aspect, Brett?
Well,
well-meaning.
Yeah.
But well-meaning, but again, I think it's this puritanical thing. If you think maybe if you're from Dublin and you think you've dealt with some colleges, you think you've dealt with the problem. But the fact is, you go around the county and there's no amnesty. You go around the state and there's no amnesty at county jail.
Okay, thanks, Bill, for your call.
Thank you,
Brad.
I'll tell you what seems to be happening at universities, and I think we've dealt with probably every university in Central Ohio, and especially with OSU. I'm not seeing an amnesty program. I'm not seeing much of an amnesty initiative. In fact, what I'm seeing is overzealous enforcement of the underage drinking laws, especially in OSU game days. Plainclothes officers, part of a strike force, will just walk down the street on campus, and if there's any drinking or evidence of drinking, regardless of any other outrageous conduct or open intoxication, these plainclothes officers are going up onto the porches. They're going into the campus houses, and they're arresting kids. And they're putting them in paddy wagons, and they're holding them throughout the whole game. And then when the game's over, they take the entire collection of kids, and they take them down to the Franklin County Jail. Every single parent of a college kid that I've represented on that scenario, and we probably have seen 50 in the last 3 to 4 years, are outraged. At the same time, they're not happy that their kid was drinking. But I say, well, why aren't you happy about that? Is it because it's illegal or because
they were caught?
They were caught. Mm-hmm. And they don't. Most parents don't say, I'm worried because it's illegal. They say, I'm upset because they got caught. And that speaks volumes to me. Parents are caught in a as well. They're in a pickle and they really don't know what to do.
What about the amnesty? Because, of course, you know, Gordon Gee, president of Ohio State University, was one of 90 college presidents that came out in 2008 and were calling for a thoughtful debate on the question of what the age should be, legal age for drinking should be, and whether it should be changed.
Yeah. I truly, truly respect those that have, excuse me, that have signed on to do that think they're signing on to encourage the debate. The debate is important, and this show is important to talk about it. Two things that talk about the amnesty thing. First, I want to clarify that the colleges that are doing it, it's within their own sanctions within the university are doing it. The law is the law, and so if the law is broken, then you can't just say, well, I think I'll pick and choose this law to obey. So if the law is broken, then
they just won't get kicked out of school, but
right.
They may still have to face.
Then yeah, so if the outside police force comes in and sees that there's something and feels that they need to do something, then that happens. Lots of times they try to contain it all within their own particular thing. But again, it's the colleges. But again, I think that's what important is that the law is the law and we need to abide by the laws until the laws are changed. And we do know, as I said, that when we have this particular law in place, there's going to be kids that drink. You're not going to get away from that. The young developing brain, where the last part to develop is the executive reasoning and the ability to make good decisions, are prone to risky behaviors. And that falls right into the college age area. If you give them carte blanche to say, okay, yeah, now it's – I don't see – anywhere, and nor does the research or the evidence do anything to support the fact that the incidence of binge drinking is going to go down, or that there'll be no increase in drinking, because in the 70s, the drinking did increase. The binge drinking did increase. And when the laws for 21 went into in place, all of that dropped. And it has continued to drop to this day. Now, you might not think that looking around, you think, oh, my gosh, binge drinking is out of control. It's not. 1984 was the highest when they do the surveys Monitoring the Future has done surveys for this whole time period. And 1984 was the year that had the highest binge drinking. It's now much, much lower than that. The thing that's happened in our society today is that the people that are drinking, that choose to drink, there's fewer of them, but they're drinking at extreme rates.
Why is that? What do we know
culture.
About that?
There's, first of all, I want to say there's no panacea for handling this, but it's take a look at the culture. Just stop and encourage everyone just to stop and take a moment and look around. And you will look at everywhere in our world, alcohol is being advertised. It's in the media. It's on billboards. It's you can now buy it in grocery stores, gas stations, pharmacies. It's the commercials are everywhere. It's penetrated our culture in a completely enormous rate. You can't even expect now to have a good time unless alcohol is involved. And that certainly wasn't the way it was when I grew up. You know, you went to one place and got the alcohol. There was no advertisements. I didn't see anybody drinking at a one-year-old's birthday party. And now that's almost standard. So the culture has changed a lot. And mm-hmm. and it's something that we need to take a look at through many, many avenues, not just changing the law.
Well, that's a good point. Yeah, Brent?
Toothpaste is out of the tube. You know, the bell's been rung. We're not going to roll back what is firmly entrenched in currently with this generation. And whether it was blue jeans in the 50s or smoking, there's always been a taboo topic that parents and older adults want to protect the younger adults. I don't know what the next generation's problem is, but as it relates to this generation's problem, it is an epidemic. The binge drinking is very dangerous. And every time I hear of a story of a kid who comes into my office with a parent or both parents and I ask them, you know, what are the signs of alcohol poisoning? They have no idea. They have no idea. Mm-hmm. That's the conversation we need to be having with kids versus don't drink, have a clean life. Thanks.
Yeah, you know, we're going to have to take a quick break right here. I want to, you know, again, tell people, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. I'll try to get to as many of those calls and emails as I can, but leave us with this thought that we spend more time and probably for very, very good reason teaching kids how to drive. Officially, you have to take driver's ed before you can drive at the age of 16. Than we ever do ever anywhere, except maybe in like a health class in high school talking about not just the dangers of drinking, but how to drink. It's two different things in a way. And I'm wondering about that and what you think about that. So we'll talk about that when we get back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Your membership with WOSU provides for the great classical music and NPR news you rely on. By supporting WOSU, you support all your trusted local and national news and information, as well as the concerts, arts, and music you love. Is it time to renew your membership? Call 1-866-897-9678 or go online at wosu.org/give. And thank you for your continued support of WOSU.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News. In 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, hour two of the program will be here, and we'll hear about the impact of new media platforms such as Twitter and Facebook on the future of journalism with Ohio State University Kiplinger Program Public Affairs Journalism Director Deborah Jasper and Associate Director Betsy Hubbard. That begins in 20 minutes at 11 o'clock right here on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Support for WOSU comes from Fast Signs, using technology to offer a concept-to-completion process for customer sign-buying needs. More information about Fast Signs is available in Westerville at 890-3821 and Columbus at 860-0103.
45 degrees in downtown Columbus at 10:40 this morning, sunshine and a high of 65 today. Clear skies tonight, a low of 38 degrees. Sunshine for Friday as well, a high of 65, and more sunshine on Saturday with a high right around 65. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about our youth and drinking, the drinking culture, and also a little bit about how it intersects with the driving culture in this country, which is super big. And I left at the break with the question is the pondering the notion that we spend a lot of time and a lot of money teaching kids how to drive a car at the age of 16, you know, which I was reminded at that age, it's a lethal weapon if you want to make it one. And yet we don't teach kids how to drink. We just warn them against it. What do you think about that, Cheryl?
Well, I think the key is that they need to know. And we have brought in, we've tried to, in addition to the health classes, bring some speakers in for kids to listen to. John Underwood came from the American Athletic Institute to talk to our athletes because, as you know, kids drink. 60% of athletes drink. That's a common fact and figure. And of those athletes, if they drink, they're losing 4 days of their athletic ability because the testosterone levels have dropped significantly from the alcohol. Those kind of things are the things we're trying to get down to their level that they understand so that the kids are more aware of what the effects of alcohol are on them. If their kids are drinking, I mean, that's a fact. And what we're finding is that in middle school, the average age they start to drink is 11. Is there anything that we can do to change that? I hope so, and hopefully educating them more about the consequences and the side effects that it can have long term.
614-292-8513. Cheryl, you're on the air. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi. I just wanted to kind of piggyback on something that Cheryl had commented on, and I wanted to point out that there's a number of students in the Franklin County area and across the country who do not abuse alcohol, mm-hmm. and the positive influence that these students can have on their peers is just as powerful, if not more, than the negative influences. I know that that Cheryl talked about a youth council in the Dublin community. There's also a group in Franklin County that called Youth to Youth that works with high school and middle school students from across the county. And every summer they host a conference that is open to 8th through 12th graders that is a great support network for the students as well.
Okay. Thank you, Cheryl.
You're welcome.
We have an email, too. If you'd like to email us, go to allsides at WOSU.org. This email is from Sandra. She writes, I grew up in Colombia before the drinking age. I had half glass of wine in special occasions with a dinner with my parents by age 15. Drunkenness was not socially acceptable. Then a minimum drinking age of 21 was introduced, and my younger sister started drinking behind my parents' back. Now the cool thing is to binge drink and getting drunk. In my opinion, this has had a detrimental effect in the Colombian society. So, I don't know if it's a apples to oranges comparison, but it is interesting because a lot of countries around the world permit what we would think of as underage drinking. I guess they don't have a limit.
Yeah, I'd like to address that because, interestingly enough, we think that France has the wonderful concept that the young people start, you know, enjoying that glass of wine and savoring a glass of wine in their family environment, and they grow up from a young age doing that. And the research and some literature that's just come out in the last 2 or 3 years is showing that France is in crisis now. And again, it's what's cause and what's the actual relationship with something. But binge drinking is out of control with their youth in France now, even when these kids have grown up under the wing of their parents, learning and being modeled how to do it properly. So there's other factors in place besides just the legal drinking age, because they can still drink.
Absolutely. That's just one factor.
That's right. Well, yeah, I've seen studies go the other direction, and especially preparing for this morning, the World Health Organization did a big study on this, and a lot of Americans would be shocked to find out how low the drinking age is in Europe, and then also the WHO found that the rate of binge drinking in the European countries, especially in the Mediterranean countries, where alcohol is really infused with much of the family rituals and religious ceremonies, is that there is no tolerance for intoxicated people, teens and young adults. It's just socially unacceptable. And the email from the individual from Colombia kind of proves that. And I was interested to see what her conclusion was going to be as you read the email, and it confirms exactly what I've heard. from foreign exchange students that I've represented. They're shocked at how teens abuse alcohol here. And I think that, you know, if we're really concerned, so much concern, how do teens at age 18, are they allowed to buy cigarettes? It's absurd. And if they have such poor judgment and their brain's not fully developed, then they shouldn't be on juries deciding major life and death decisions, death penalty cases, major lawsuits, malpractice cases.
That's a good point if they're executive.
Should these people be flying F-18s? Should they be shooting guns at war? I mean, you know, there's a line.
There's a lot of people who would say they shouldn't be, that 18's too young to be going to war.
And if they're not the biggest instrumentality of destruction that we give kids is a vehicle. And raising the driving age probably needs to occur, at least that conversation needs to occur. I don't really say so much as an age, but as your senior year in high school. Another thought that I have had that I think makes sense is you take a new legal limit, the age 25 and under, and you lower that legal limit to really punish drinking and driving. And get that legal limit down to half of what it currently is. And people are really surprised, especially parents that come in, if their high school kid gets arrested for DUI, they find out there are hardly any mandatory penalties for underage DUI. It's a 60-day license suspension. There's no other mandatory penalties. It's a fourth-degree misdemeanor, whereas simply holding a beer can at a tailgate is a first-degree misdemeanor. So just because we have laws in the book doesn't make them right.
Marcy, do the laws seem out of whack? Do you agree that maybe you could toughen up the penalties for kids who drink and drive?
You know, I'm not into really examining the laws completely, but I think that we need to look at the penalties for the kids and have that conversation. Again, I am not an attorney, so mm-hmm. I can't address the legal pieces to it. But what I do come through is from a prevention eyes and come through it by doing a lot of research and a lot of studies on things. And when we talk about the fact that kids shouldn't maybe be driving and they shouldn't be making these big decisions because their brain's not fully developed. This is the time of life when they are making those connections, those little synapses, those little mm-hmm. things that come together. So the ones that aren't used are pruned out. The ones that are used are pruned together and make who they are as adults. So if you're putting them into a situation where they are making decisions and for juries or you're making them decisions of going to war and learning it through the basic training in the military, how things happen and how you handle a gun and how you handle combat activity, that's adding to their knowledge base. That is giving them that ability to put those types of reasoning things together and growing their brain. Alcohol completely interferes with that. And alcoholism or dependency, addiction, is a learned trait. So if you put that on a young brain that's making those connections at a super high speed to become the adult that they're going to be, and that comes in and interferes with it and becomes then something that becomes part of their learning thing, then you've done a disservice to that child. And in fact, we know that right now that the highest group of individuals who are dependent on alcohol is 18 to 20. That's the highest group.
Then we probably ought to question the validity of 21 drinking age because it's been here for since 1983. It's done nothing then, Marcy.
Well, as I said in the beginning when I started out, the research has disproven that. The research is that kids are drinking. Fewer kids are drinking now. There's fewer deaths and there's fewer injuries. It's just the research is clear on that. So there is a subset of kids who are going to drink. They're high risk takers. They're always going to do it. We're not ever going to get away from that. But those that choose to do it, there are fewer numbers of those than there were in 1984 and in the 70s. I mean, the research is right there. There's a gentleman out of Florida, University of Florida, by the name of Alex Wagner, who's dedicated two decades to studying this very issue. And his conclusion after doing all these studies and reviewing all the research out there says there is no other public policy that is more beneficial at this point. But it is not the only one. We have to take a look at what they're doing in Dublin as parents. Parents have to be engaged with what their kids are doing. We have to look at the environment, getting rid of the availability of it, how much it's advertised, glamorizing it. It's a big concept.
You know, when I mentioned at the outset that what was more interesting than the story from Channel 10 about the big bust in Powell a couple weeks ago was the comments, the 300-plus comments. And one of them was from one of the kids, or at least allegedly from one of the kids. You can't really identify it in those kind of postings, but one of the kids who had been arrested. And it said, kid who was arrested. That was their name. And there was a lot of back and forth about the elitist, you know, the wealthy Powellites and, you know, that whole thing and a lot of classism going on in the arguments. But one remark the kid did say was, yeah, it's all about money here. It's all about status. Nobody really cares. If you get caught, you know, your parents can buy your way out, and that's all that matters. And it startled me in a way. And his comments, I found his or her, I don't know, seemed more interesting than any of them. And one of his comments was, and as soon as I get done with all of this and get out of jail or whatever it was, he goes, the party's at my house. So,
well, I mean, it's. A law that's being openly flouted and as brazenly as that and a posting, again, it goes back to the legitimacy of the law to begin with. When over 50% of the targeted population of a law is breaking it, as a democratic republic, you go, okay, does this make sense anymore? It's been a number of years since 83. And as it relates to the causal effect of safety, I was shocked to find out that in 1983, the federal government reported that only 14% of people wear seatbelts. 2006, they said 80%. We didn't have airbags. We didn't have as safe vehicles as we have now. You know, there are other causes at play here that lead to the effects of reduction in fatalities and serious injury. Binge drinking, as acknowledged by the folks on the other side of this conversation, binge drinking has not been nipped by the 21 limit. We need a new conversation with our kids. We need to talk about girls staying together at parties. Don't leave a girlfriend behind. We need to talk to boys about what they tend to do when they drink too much, that wolf pack mentality, the pre-gaming, the heavy drinking, the abusive drinking to go before they go out. Get kids back if they're going to be drinking anyway. Get them in an environment where there's sober supervision. Get them back in a restaurant that's got a permit with trained people that are going to keep an eye on them. Get them out of there if they're too drunk. Get them in a cab. Don't let them walk to a car. It's silly, yeah. The policy that we have in place right now.
Let's take a phone call right now, 614-292-8513. Stephanie, you're on the air. You are a mental health provider, you said, and you want to comment on the brain-altering properties of alcohol?
Yeah, being in the mental health field, and specifically in addiction, I hear all the time, and I see this all the time, is the effect that drug or alcohol use had. I believe strongly in the brain development. Marilyn and Cheryl have been mentioning, and it's such a pattern that's so repeated throughout the field that this is such a strong influence when you're a young person. And so I think as a parent, it's important for us to think, you know, as a teen myself, I was involved. A caller called in earlier and mentioned the program Youth to Youth. I was involved with that as a teen, and it was those formative years of my life that I, when I saw other positive people making choices around me, it's those peers that influenced me, that I feel like, you know, I was able to make those healthy choices as a young person. And then as an adult and as I grew older and those prefrontal cortex, that was sort of more developed, and, you know, I was able to then make choices for myself. But as a young teen, when there's pressures and you're influenced by so many other people, I think, you know, the conversation the parent should be having is, am I putting my kid in an environment where positive choices are being made and being rewarded, and they're seeing that choice, being rewarded, rather than putting them in a destructive environment that's being monitored or supervised.
Okay. Stephanie, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
And I think that's very important what she said, that parents need to be having this conversation. Just as we talk to our kids when they're learning to drive, we need to be talking to them not the day you're dropping them off at college about drinking and what's going to be brought to peer pressure there, but What is socially acceptable? How do you, if as Brad was saying, if you're a girl, what should you be doing if you are in a bar and you see a friend get drunk or you yourself are drunk? What are the things that you need to be doing? And these are the conversations that need to be happening early on in the beginning of high school. And they're awkward. A lot of parents don't want to do it. And I think that's really important, that parents need to be educated and starting those conversations with their kids at an early age so that their kids can make right decisions and be safe. That's the big thing.
I don't know, Brad, if what you were talking about as far as the wolf pack goes, but alcohol is involved in a lot of acquaintance rape, a lot of sexual assault among teenagers and young adults. A lot of boys will say, well, I didn't know she seemed okay with it. Well, she was drunk. Mm-hmm. And it's different. It's kind of interesting. Richard, you're on the air.
Yeah, just two quick comments, I
okay.
guess. One is going back to what one of the gentlemen said earlier. Yes, if I was old enough to fight and die and kill for you, I could certainly have a drink. Now, I grew up at a time I could. I grew up in New York. You could drink everything at 18, mind you. Mm-hmm. So we all drank at 15, 16. But most of us, by the time we're 18 or 19, we were past that stage. None of my friends ever got arrested for drunk and driving except for two guys who, they were alcoholics at 15, and they stayed alcoholics, and one fortunately is not. But the other comment is on this issue with Ohio State. I was there when you could drink 3-2 beer, which is sort of what we have today anyway. But yeah, I don't think there was the problem with the big parties, the rowdiness in the streets nearly as much in the late 60s. Well, for other reasons there was, but for drinking that there mm-hmm. is now. So I think the drinking age ought to be 18 and leave it at that.
Do you think it should just be flat out drink any? You can drink anything at the age of 18 or like Brad suggested, maybe keep hard liquor at 21 and at least introduce beer?
That's a compromise which Ohio had, and maybe that worked. Again, I grew up where you could drink everything. So personally, I would say at 18, you're old enough to kill, you're old enough to drink.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks, Richard, for your call.
All right.
Appreciate it. I just want to read this email real quick and then maybe get some parting comments. We only have about a minute left. And I always cut it short. I wonder if your guests could address the fact that in Ohio, serving non-alcoholic beer to underage kids is not allowed. And that I guess, is the idea. It kind of goes to that alcopop issue where you start introducing kids to alcohol-like substances and it encourages drinking. But and it's a good question. We don't have time for an answer from each of you before. But, Brad, just 15 seconds.
Again, it goes back to conditioning. And there's a reason why freshman year is the worst and most deadly year in college. It's because they fly out of the coop and naturally the binge drinking kicks in there. Move that up a little bit. Keep it around sober, supervised adults.
I just have time for one more comment, Marcy. Just...
The kids that enter college, yes, right. The first is important, that first year. But those kids that are coming to college and drinking like that have already started in high school. Many of them already started in middle school. So it's the parents and the community's job to really take a look at setting those expectations of what's the proper way to approach it.
All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.